This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology, brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku,
and GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Every week on Science Fantastic, we profile some of the most amazing developments in science and technology that touches our lives and even changes history. Well, with us today, we have a treat. We have another theoretical physicist talking about Stephen Hawking, perhaps one of the greatest theoretical physicists of our time. And usually, when somebody writes a biography of a famous person, what they do is they interview the people surrounding them, and usually they're professional historians. They're not right there in the forefront of change. However, this book is different. This book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics by Leonard Mlodinow. And I should point out that he is a theoretical physicist, like myself. He got his PhD, in fact, at the University of California at Berkeley, where I got my PhD. And he spent 15 years collaborating, living in close quarters with Stephen Hawking to get one of the most intimate portrayals of his life, his time, his struggles, his thinking process. So once again, we are talking about the life and times of one of the great minds of our age, Professor Stephen Hawking. And if you want to know more about Science Fantastic, go to my website. It's mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We have 4 million fans on Facebook, and I've written 4 New York Times bestsellers. The latest one is about the space program. The book is called The Future of Humanity, Our Destiny in the Universe. As we go back to the moon, onto Mars, and begin perhaps dreaming about one day going to the stars. Well, today we're going to talk about somebody who actually did dream about going to the stars, and that's theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking. And with us today, once again, is Leonard Mlodinow, who's written a unique book. A book written by another physicist, a colleague, a collaborator, with intimate knowledge of Stephen Hawking, and someone who for 15 years had an intimate, close relationship, not just with Stephen, but with his family as well. And as you know, Professor Hawking spent a lifetime struggling against ALS, a debilitating, paralyzed disease, leading to paralysis, which would have crushed any individual. I remember when I first went and visited Stephen Hawking, he invited me to give a talk about string theory, which is one of the things I work on, and I had a chance to visit his house. And I was amazed that there were contraptions around his house that allowed him to function. One device could actually, you push a button and turn the page of a journal. And I realized here was a man who wanted to do physics so much that he was willing to make all these sacrifices even in the face of a debilitating, paralyzing disease. Well, once again, with us today is Leonard Mlodinow, author of a number of great books, including The Grand Design, A Briefer History of Time, written with Stephen Hawking. But the latest book is Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. So, Leonard, first question for you is, when you were a kid now, years and years ago, what steered you in the direction of science and eventually physics?
Well, when I was a kid, I liked two things. I liked, other than playing baseball, I liked chemistry and I liked math. I liked chemistry when I discovered that I could make formulations that blew up things or flew into the sky. And so those were the more innocent days where you could actually get those chemicals and people weren't afraid of terrorists. And I had a lot of fun making spectacular reactions in chemistry. But in physics, that was the more intellectual side, or really in math. I was fascinated by what I read about Einstein and this idea of curved space. I just remember trying to wonder, what does that mean? And in the seventh or eighth grade, I found a book on, which I still have, on non-Euclidean geometry, which is the geometry of curved space, where the angles of triangles don't add up to 180 and so on. All the things you learn in school are wrong. And I learned that there's a whole other reality out there. In a way, it's like science fiction, but it's real. And it's not what you learn in school. It's something different. There are different possibilities for the universe. And that really fascinated me. And so I went along through my high school years with those two interests, chemistry and math. And when I got to college, I read a book by Richard Feynman, the great iconic physicist. And that really inspired me to move more toward physics from chemistry. And that, and the fact that chemistry didn't really have enough math for me. I really liked math, and I thought that the math was too simple in chemistry. And other thing I should point out, that they didn't appreciate you making bombs anymore when you got to college. You had to do organic chemistry and other kind of more boring experiments with regular chemicals.
Yes, that's what he had to do. Now, in your book, you have a rather intimate portrayal of Professor Stephen Hawking over a 15-year period. So first of all, how did you meet Stephen Hawking, and how did you collaborate, and what is it like to work up close to a great mind like that?
Well, he contacted me after he read my first two books. My first book, which I remember talking to you about, Michio, on your program many years ago, was called Euclid's Window. It was about curved space, that very subject that got me interested in math and physics. And my second book was about Feynman, called Feynman's Rainbow, and was about how I learned to follow my passions from my interactions with Feynman when I was first at Caltech. And he was looking for somebody to work with, because it's so hard for him to write, to type, to communicate. And he wanted to find someone who had a sense of humor and whose writing he liked, but also who was an expert in physics who could really understand his work. So that really narrows down the community.
And exactly.
He doesn't it? Yeah. As you and me and not too many others. So he had his people contact my agent one day, and I just got a phone call saying, would you like to work with Stephen Hawking? And who's going to say no to that? So I was very honored. Working with him was, first of all, it was a great honor, but it took some getting used to, because I don't know if I should tell your audience how he communicated. Maybe they may not know.
Go ahead.
Well, back in those days, he could move his thumb, and so he had essentially a mouse to click with. And in later years, he had a sensor on his glasses, and he would twitch his cheek, and so it picked up essentially a mouse click. And then on his wheelchair, there was mounted a computer screen, which was attached to a computer. And it was like playing a video game. There were groups of words, and the cursor would highlight different groups. And he had to click when it got to the groups of letters, when it got to the group of letters he was looking for. And then it would go on the individual letters, and he'd click again to catch a letter. And in that way, painstakingly, he'd compose his sentences and his words. And when he was done, he could click somewhere else to have it read.
Let me ask you a question. How many words could he communicate in any given minute? Approximately how many words per minute?
That's what I was about to say. He could, when I was working with him, it was about 6 words a minute. It was about 6 words per minute. That's what, 7 words. So that sentence would take him a minute. So it took some getting used to. And at first, I would daydream or get impatient or, you know, surf the web. But, you know, I soon learned that this was actually a real advantage to me, that it took him so long, because I was sitting next to him and I could see his sentence begin to form. And I could either complete it for him and save him some time, or I could think about what he was saying while he was doing it.
Let's take a short commercial break. And after the break, we're going to continue the discussion of the late Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics by Leonard Mlodinow. And you are listening to Science Fantastic. And if you want to get on 100 radio stations and the Internet, give us a call at 612-564-8135 and ask that question. question about science that you've always wanted to but never had a chance. So stay tuned as we continue a discussion of the late Stephen Hawking, his life and times.
The stress levels of Americans may be at an all-time high. From education to business to basic needs to politics, the 2020 pandemic-related stressors are pushing many of us to near breaking point. That's why you should consider the stress and pain-relieving products from sunny-bay.com, like our lavender neck wraps and pads infused with premium Washington lavender buds. They relieve tension and relax with a soothing scent of lavender. And lifestyle expert Jennifer Bonner recommends products from Sunny Bay.
Sunny Bay's hands-free neck wraps should be your go-to pain relief solution.
Give gifts to family and friends that relieve stress and pain. Give love and care by giving the best. Give pillows, neck wraps, and body wraps from sunny-bay.com, a Biomed DB design company. Just click sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. danpilla.com.
Attention business owners body slammed by overwhelming debt. If your business is in trouble, hassled by creditors, if you're frustrated, finally fed up with big business bailouts while your business has been left for dead, please listen close. There's a brand new fast-track bankruptcy. Some have even called it the biggest small business bailout in American history. Designed for individuals and their businesses. And look, almost no one knows about this yet. My attorney wasn't even aware of it. The truth is, beating the system has never been easy because it's rigged in a sense against the little guy. But here's the jaw-dropping news nobody's talking about. They've literally just changed the system so that you can beat it. But only if you understand how the new game has to be played. Find out if you qualify at pocketsoflight.com. This government-backed small business repair program is still legal, but may not be renewed after the election. Fight back fairly, fight back ethically at pocketsoflight.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. And today we're talking about a rather intimate portrayal of one of the great minds of our time, the late Professor Stephen Hawking, written by Professor Leonard Mlodinow. He's a professor of theoretical physics, and he's the author of this new book, Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. You know, when I was young, we of course idolized people like Albert Einstein or Isaac Newton, but one problem was that we couldn't interact with them. We couldn't ask them questions. And the question I wanted to ask them is, how do you think? I mean, what leads you to converge on a new scientific principle? Forget the math and the details. What led you to a new concept, a new picture, a new worldview of the universe? And unfortunately, they had already passed away. But Professor Stephen Hawking, in our time, has had a chance to interact with the public, and Leonard Mlodinow is a professor of theoretical physics and author of this book, Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. So we get an intimate portrayal of the man, his relationship with his family, the public, and also science itself. So, Leonard, when we left off, we were talking about how difficult it was to work with the late Professor Stephen Hawking. But what was it like to actually write a book, actually co-write two books with him? What was it like? Because, of course, a book consists of thousands of words.
Well, the way we worked was we would we first spend a year. And Stephen was had extreme attention to detail. And so you would think, because it's so hard for him to communicate and it only came out at six words a minute, that he might take shortcuts, or if we had a disagreement about something, he may tend to give in. But he wasn't like that. At the end of a conversation, it would usually be me who was exhausted, not him. And we first spent about a year debating what should go into the book I'm talking about, The Grand Design, now our second book. And after that, well, we split up the work, who would write which parts of it, and then we would trade them by email and look at each other's, and then we would meet for long periods of time and spend night and day in Cambridge going over them really word by word. And, you know, it sounds like there's not much, six words a minute sounds pretty slow, but if you think about how many words there are in a book and how many minutes that takes, it's not all that many minutes. For most people, writing a book is more editing and rewriting than it would be the typing, even at six words a minute. So that wasn't, it's really not so much the getting the words out as it is getting the book right and getting the ideas out. And as I said, he was very demanding in that sense, where everything just had to be right. He was a perfectionist.
Okay, well, when I first met Stephen Hawking, he spoke in a garble, and his PhD students would, in some sense, the joke was, they would have to have a PhD in understanding the garble. And so, yeah, some students were actually chosen on their ability to understand the garbling that came out when Stephen Hawking talked. Later, of course, he lost control of his vocal cords, used his finger, and later just began to twitch and thoughts. So what was it like now for the people surrounding them? Did they have to sacrifice because, of course, he had to have 24-hour surveillance? The slightest medical hiccup could cause a fatal problem. He had to have medical care right on the spot at any given time. Was it trying for the people surrounding him, his wife, his kids, his family? What was it like to see the family up close?
Well, it was very trying for everybody. But what happened was, after a while, first of all, you got used to it. But secondly, you learned the shortcuts. First of all, you could watch what he was typing and sometimes finish his sentences. You could also, he had ways of saying yes and no with his expression. So you could often, if you knew where the conversation was going, you could give him various alternatives to respond to. But really most interesting was that he developed a very sophisticated kind of nonverbal communication. I mean, he had obviously frowns and smiles, and he could raise eyebrows for yes, no, I like this, I don't like that. But that's beyond that, he had a much more complex way of communicating, where when you're talking to him, if you're phrasing things right and you're watching his face, you could really understand in a very complex manner how he felt about something. It was very interesting, almost supernatural. I mean, I felt sometimes like I knew what he was thinking without even knowing how I knew it. He was transmitting through his facial expressions to me, and I wasn't quite sure on the conscious level how I had this feeling about what he was thinking, but I did feel that. And so I thought that was really an interesting adaptation that he had. And it's not just me. I mean, I talked to his family and his friends, and they all say that you could tell so much from his face, that his face really spoke volumes.
Okay, now let's try to summarize some of the work of Professor Stephen Hawking. When we talk about Einstein, we talk about E equals MC squared. We talked about curved space. When we talk about Stephen Hawking, we talk about black holes. And even children know that, well, black holes are black because everything gets sucked in, nothing comes out. But if you were to summarize his work, would you say that in some sense, black holes are gray, not really black? How would you summarize his body of work?
Well, he did five major accomplishments. And the first two were to talk about the Big Bang and the laws of black holes that are derived from Einstein's theory, but not relativity, but not quantum theory. And then his most famous work was his third major piece of work, where he started to incorporate quantum into his ideas. And that's where he discovered what you're talking about, the Hawking, so-called Hawking radiation, that black holes aren't really black, that because of quantum effects, the immense gravity of the black holes forms pairs of particles just outside of it, in which one falls back in and one goes escapes into space or escapes the black hole. And in that way, the black hole is actually drained. That's kind of radiation, and the black hole is actually drained of its energy very slowly, very gradually. But theoretically, if you waited long enough, an isolated black hole through this process would shrink and then disappear. And that was to the minds of the physicists at the time, revolutionary, because the idea and the understanding of black holes was that they can never shrink, that some things that fall in never come back out again. And here he was saying that things actually, because of quantum effects, come back out. And so that was a very bold and adventurous thing, to a piece of work to look at. And he had to have a really open mind to accept that, because it was so, it went so against the grain of conventional wisdom.
Now, one thing that astonished me when I read some of his work is the fact that he's willing to admit that he's wrong sometimes. Physicists get very huffing and puffing whenever someone criticizes their work. But I saw one paper where Stephen simply says, the previous paper I wrote on this topic is totally wrong. Disregard the previous paper. This paper is correct. And lately, I mean, in the later part of his life, he had a controversy with, well, string theorists. On the question of what happens if you send the encyclopedia into a black hole, Hawking thought that all the information might be lost forever. Nothing comes out again. Once you throw an encyclopedia, all that information is lost. But string theorists, of which I'm one, says no, that we conserve information. So what are your thoughts, given the fact that Hawking actually changed his mind on this topic?
Well, that's a very interesting question. That is one of his, I think, greatest traits as a physicist, is to be able to change his mind, to admit that he was wrong, or even to accept contradictions. And he had so many contradictions in his life. He's supposed to die and he's living. Start with that one. And so he was very flexible in that way. And with regard to the information, yes, he made a bet that the information is lost. And if you think about what I said and combine it with what you said, imagine that you throw an encyclopedia into the black hole, and now the black hole eventually shrinks by radiating just non-encyclopedia information, just radiating energy out. What happened to the information that was in the encyclopedia? Stephen said it was lost, and he made a famous bet on it. But then he was doing the math, and he decided that actually it's not lost, and that he was wrong, and he conceded the bet. And ironically, however, a lot of people didn't believe his calculation. He had to use certain approximations and wave his hands a little bit. So even his co-better, Kip Thorne, wasn't convinced by Stephen's reversal. And the guy that they bet with, John Preskill, who Stephen was saying, okay, you win the bet, he wasn't convinced by Stephen's argument either. So the argument went on. As far as I know, it's still going on. But it's interesting that they were all more interested in the truth than in being right. And I think that's a very important trait for a physicist, and not all physicists have that trait.
Right, exactly. And once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call at 612-564-8135. A special guest is Professor Leonard Mlodinow. The book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics, now available at your bookstore.
For listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News.
I'm Jeremy Scott. Republicans on New Year's Day for a fourth straight day blocked attempts from Democrats to push through $2,000 stimulus checks. The Senate voted to overturn President Trump's veto of the National Defense Authorization Act, Trump calling the actions of Congress pathetic. The president vetoed another bill, one that was passed with bipartisan support of both houses of Congress last month. It gradually eliminates the use of large-scale drift nets in the fishing of federal waters off the coast of California. A federal judge has dismissed a last-ditch effort led by Representative Louie Gohmert of Texas and a group of Republican electors from Arizona to give Vice President Mike Pence the power to overturn the results of the presidential election when Congress formally counts the Electoral College votes next week. Heavy snow, ice, and power outages are gripping the northeastern U.S. Conditions expected to worsen through Saturday. This is USA Radio News. As the new coronavirus strain shows up in the U.S. and other countries, what about the vaccine?
New variants of a COVID-19 strain are being found across the country, the latest being Florida. Dr. Anthony Fauci telling NBC News they are not considering changing the dosing requirements and variants for the vaccine due to the new strain.
Right now, we're not doing that. But in discussions that we've had about what the options are, certainly that has not been completely rejected. But that's not going to happen right now. You have to remember that when you're doing things like administering vaccinations, you want to do it based on the science.
From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
The Florida Health Department says a man in his 20s in Martin County who has not traveled recently is the state's first case. Earlier this week, Colorado and California announced their first cases of the new variant. UK scientists believe it to be more contagious than previous strains. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Tejibo Tea Club's original pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build the red corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A.com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
We have all seen and perhaps used the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you ever noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? With bacteria and virus problems, sanitizers and hand washing are the first line of defense against infectious disease. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements as set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration as a first aid antiseptic. When it comes to sanitizers, it only makes sense that it lasts till the next application and doesn't dry and crack your skin, inviting infection. For long-lasting alcohol-free sanitizing, come to GCNteam.com keyword antibacterial. That's GCNteam.com, antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203. 877-878-4203.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today we're talking about the late Stephen Hawking. The book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics, written by a professor of theoretical physics, Leonard Mlodinow. He got his PhD in theoretical physics, as I did, from the University of California at Berkeley. He's taught at Caltech. The book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. He's written other books, including The Grand Design and A Briefer History of Time. And we are talking about one of the great minds of our time. Now, Leonard, let me ask you a question. This disease that he had, ALS, would have crushed any ordinary individual. I mean, thinking about it, you have a death warrant. You know you're not going to live much longer than so many years. Your body is wasting away. You can barely move your fingertips. I mean, what kept him going? What made him tick? given the fact that he had actually a rather long life given his disease, but it was something that was hanging over his head. He could die instantly at any given time. What was it like for him to face those odds?
Well, this is really why I wrote the book, because I found that by getting to know Stephen and working with him and just being with him, he was a tremendous inspiration. You know, his whole everyday, his day-to-day world, people who see him in the media or on the movie, they get kind of an idealized, mythological version of Stephen Hawking, not the real one. In his real life, he had to go through tremendous obstacles every minute, every hour of the day. For example, I talk in the book about how I see a bead of sweat going down his forehead, and that, you know, how that tickles, and you just wipe it away. But he couldn't do that. He had to just sit there and take it, or wait to see if one of his carers notices and comes to wipe it for him. But when he went to bed at night, he can't turn in bed. So you know how you get aches or you turn to be more comfortable. He's in a position and he can't turn himself. That can be torture to somebody. He had his carers who would turn him periodically, but if he felt uncomfortable in some position, he couldn't change that. And later years of life, he had a lot of pain from his bones because his bones were very brittle, and he had a lot of arthritis. So it was, you know, his life was a series of challenges. And yet he was happy. He was optimistic. He had a great sense of humor. He somehow learned to take control of his mind to you know, like the ancient Stoics said, that happiness, real happiness comes from within. And if you have that, no one and no circumstances can take it from you. And he had somehow found that. And so that not only gave me perspective on my own little piddling problems, but it taught me that, you know, how to face them, that I can, you know, if a mosquito bites me and it's itching and it's really driving me nuts, that's my fault. I can learn to not mind it. I can learn to not feel it. And he really taught me, you know, showed me the way to approach such problems in life. And so that's really why I wrote the book, because if you see him going through his everyday life and his interactions with people, it's really teaches you something about your own life.
Now, I once read a biography of Stephen Hawking that said that as a grad student, he was rather actually ordinary. He was listless, unfocused. He had great potential. Everybody knew he was smart, but he didn't really apply himself. But then when he got this death warrant stating that he only has a few years more left to live, that really shook him up to the point where he said to himself, I have to work on something great. If you only have a few years left, why squander it simply getting drunk or dissipating yourself? Why not focus yourself? So what are your thoughts? Do you think that the disease in some sense also helped to make the man as well as destroy his body? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, not only are those my thoughts.
We have to take a short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to continue our dialogue with Leonard Mlodinow. The book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. And you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call, 612-564-8135 is the number to call if you want to get on national radio.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
It's not over. Sadly, our nation is going through tough times again, with no end in sight, and nobody knows what might happen next year. That's why it's a good idea to plan ahead, so you aren't caught off guard. Nothing's more important than having enough food to eat, and we're here to help. We're My Patriot Supply, America's leading emergency preparedness company. We provide long-term emergency food that lasts up to 25 years in storage. When grocery stores run empty or disasters strike, our foods will be there when you need it most. Act now and secure at least a 4-week emergency food kit full of tasty meals that provide 2,000 calories a day. We have dozens of emergency food storage kits to choose from. When the government tells you not to go out, you can have the peace of mind that comes from being prepared. When you order from MyPatriotSupply.com, your food will arrive discreetly at your doorstep in no time. Prepare today. Time is short. MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance.
Stock market have you nervous with all the massive fluctuations? With the hope for a COVID vaccine on the rise, shifting political landscape, and the election at an end, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. With Vantage Point, you don't have to. Text MONEY to 411411 to find out how our technology can forecast market trends up to 3 days in advance with incredible accuracy. Text MONEY to 411411 to get what you need to stay ahead of market trends and find explosive moves before they happen. Vantage Point's patented technology analyzes huge quantities of global data in seconds. Stop guessing. Start predicting trends 72 hours in advance. Text MONEY to 411411 and experience Vantage Point for free. Text MONEY to 411411 so you can protect and grow your capital now. Don't wait. Text MONEY to 411411.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, if you want to find out more about Science Fantastic, go to our website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We have 4 million fans on Facebook, and you can check out some of the things that I do, interviews, books, and things like that. Well, with us today is Leonard Mlodinow, PhD physicist, author of a new book, Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. We should also point out that Leonard has written a number of great books, including The Grand Design and A Briefer History of Time, and he is a collaborator with Stephen Hawking. Well, when we last left off, we were talking about, well, the fact that when Stephen was a young man, apparently he was rather unfocused, listless, didn't really apply himself until he got this death warrant that he only has a few years left to live, and he decided to focus on some of the biggest problems in physics, that is, the application of the quantum theory to Einstein's theory of general relativity and black holes and things like that. So, Leonard, do you think that's true in the sense that the illness, in some sense, might have destroyed a lesser mortal, but in some sense helped to create Stephen Hawking? What are your thoughts?
Well, Michio, not only do I agree and think it's true, Stephen told me that. We were having a talk, we had a couple talks about that, and we were talking about the effects of his illness on him. He thought that they were positive. I was shocked. He said that, you know, he was kind of a goof off when he was in college, and he didn't have any direction in life. And when he got this death sentence after a period of some months of being depressed, he suddenly almost had a revelation that he found a purpose and meaning in his life. And, you know, that's what we all seek. And that's what the famous Viktor Frankl, who wrote about, you know, the death camps in World War II, said that those who could survive that were those who had meaning and purpose in life. And that's what he found. And I think that was one of the major qualities that got him through for so many years. And the meaning that he found was, or the purpose, he realized he wanted to answer certain questions about existence. Why are we here? Where did the universe come from? Why does it have the character that it does, or the laws that it does? And he decided to dedicate what he thought would just be his last few years. It turned out to be decades, but he decided to dedicate those years to that, and it really drove him and it kept him going.
Now, let me ask you a question that I've always wanted to ask, and that is, in the early days of something called supergravity, that is a more powerful version of Einstein's theory of gravity, Stephen Hawking said we could be on the verge of the final theory, the theory of everything, the theory that eluded Einstein for the last 30 years of his life. But of course, supergravity and superstring theory is a very difficult theory, and it's sort of gotten bogged down in the last several years because it is so complex mathematically. New areas of mathematics are being created out of string theory. So what was Stephen Hawking's understanding of string theory, and did he think that this ultimate theory was in hand, or what were his final thoughts on that subject?
Well, it's funny because I think that was in the 80s where he made the famous statement that by the end of the century we'll have theory of everything, and he was basing that on string theory. So I talked to him. I asked him the question. It was some, I don't know what year it was exactly, 2005, 2010. I said to him, hey, I brought up that prediction that he made. I said, so Stephen, you know, what do you say about this? And he says, I still believe that we will have the theory of everything by the end of the century. Of course, it was a new century. So.
End of which century, right?
Yeah, so the which century, exactly. He was a believer in string theory, and the M theory is really at the heart of the basis of our book, The Grand Design. So he believed that that was the answer and that we should have patience.
Okay, so his rule of thumb was have patience. There is a theory of everything. We just are not smart enough yet to figure out all the details.
Right, exactly. And you know, at one point, Kip Thorne, his good friend, Nobel Prize winner from Caltech for gravity waves, he told me that that Stephen used to, in his very early years, used to do very rigorous physics, very mathematically correct physics, which is very hard to do and not necessarily that useful in the sense that we don't have to prove theorems like mathematicians do. We can make approximations and get to our answers. And he found that was just too hard at some point. And he changed. Again, he changed when he was sick and he had trouble doing that rigorous math. And he said, I'm going to do non-rigorous math because it'll get you the answers faster. But still not
okay.
Answer, I guess.
Let's take a short commercial break. And after the break, we're going to continue a discussion with Leonard Mlodinow now about his book, Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. And you are listening to Science Fantastic. Give us a call, 612-564-8135 is the number to call.
You hear the headlines. You know health insurance is a real mess right now. Premiums have skyrocketed, and in most cases, you're stuck with your plan until open enrollment. But there's a government rule that allows you to qualify for lower health insurance rates if your life has changed. That means if you've changed jobs, if you're having a child, if you're getting married, if you're getting divorced, even if you run a small business or you're self-employed, this law may qualify you to get lower health insurance rates. Call the Health Insurance Hotline today. Learn how this 10-minute call can help you get lower health insurance rates. This is a free service to help consumers learn the laws to help them qualify for lower health insurance rates. So call right now to learn more. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. Call 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com. Keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, simulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's N-U-T-R-I Medical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNLife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is physicist Leonard Mlodinow, who had an intimate look at the life and times of Stephen Hawking. So his book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. Now, I would be derelict unless I asked some question about Professor Hawking's private life, because of course the tabloids have had sensational headlines about his love life and so on and so forth. So I would be derelict unless I ask you a few questions about this. First of all, he had a second wife, who some people claimed, including his first wife, claimed that the second wife was a gold digger out for his money, because of course Professor Hawking wrote monster bestsellers like A Brief History of Time. And according to the tabloids, one day he was left in the sun, left to die, according to the tabloids, left alone without any help. He couldn't scream for help. He couldn't get out of the harsh sun. Somebody left him out to die, said the tabloids. They interviewed his first wife, and the first wife said, the fault is the second wife because she's a gold digger. Well, you had a rather up-close viewpoint of everybody. Do you think the tabloids blew it out of proportion? Because Stephen Hawking himself told the tabloids to respect my private life. What are your thoughts?
Well, there were some people who believed in those rumors. Stephen denied it. His friend Kip Thorne, again, who I know fairly well, he also said it wasn't true. A police investigated and said they could find no evidence of any such thing. And, you know, I don't have firsthand knowledge of whatever happened or may have happened or not happened, but that's the lay of the land that I got. And, you know, he and Elaine were very much in love as his second wife, but they also had a stormy relationship and they had their conflicts. And, it wasn't that just as Stephen was amazing in that despite his disability, he did a lot of very normal things. And he had normal relationships, so it's you know, to have a relationship where you argue with your spouse is not that unusual. And so I don't know, you know, any firsthand knowledge of those accusations, but the situation is what I described.
Okay, well, according to Hollywood, the Hollywood version of romance, women fall in love with a man because he's charming and handsome and, of course, rich. Rich, of course, is nice. But Hawking was totally paralyzed. He could barely move his eyelids. And communicating with him was extremely problematic as a consequence. And yet, there were women who were attracted to him. So what was it? The charisma? Did he have some kind of animal magnetism? Or did people simply want to bask in his fame and maybe even his checkbook? I mean, what are your thoughts? Because there's been so much speculation about that.
Well, I would know how much of people's motivation comes from external qualities, fame and money and all that. But I know that he was a very warm person. He could communicate. I mean, we wrote that thick book together, and we had a friendship. We went out to pubs. We went out to dinner many times. We had a regular relationship, even though, I mean, it does take a lot of time. It's something that you have to get to know him first before you can develop that. But he was a warm person. He loved other people. He and his carers were close. He would come to their family events. He would lend them money when they needed it. He had a great sense of humor, a great outlook. So, you know, obviously he wasn't, to use a dated term, Charles Atlas, you know, a weightlifter or the Hollywood, typical Hollywood star. But as a human being, as a person with a personality, he was a very attractive person. So, I can see how people, you know, could be attracted to him.
Now let me ask you a question about history. How will historians of the future view Professor Stephen Hawking, given the fact that we've now discovered gravity waves from outer space of colliding black holes? We've actually even photographed the event horizon of a black hole, which made history, something that came out of science fiction. Here's a photograph of the object, a black hole. So how do you think history will treat Stephen Hawking?
I think they'll view him as a great pioneer in something, the same the kind of thing you do, Michio, in how to unite or reconcile quantum theory and gravity. And it's one of the great questions of our time in the physics world, theoretical questions. And he really was a pioneer. And you know, don't forget, when he started doing it in the 60s, nobody much cared about it. They didn't care about black holes. Not many people worked on the early universe. And Stephen took it from there, made great progress, and made it actually a hot subject, a hot field, and I think he'll be remembered for that.
And isn't it true that in Einstein's waning years, that is the 1940s and 1950s, that he was sort of relegated to the side because the quantum theory, atomic physics, nuclear physics, that was the hot, sexy topic in physics, and people thought that Einstein was an old fuddy-duddy, that he was out of touch, that all the new breakthroughs were being made in the quantum theory. So didn't Stephen Hawking reverse that, given the fact that, yeah, go on?
Yeah, exactly. And Einstein recognized that and talked about it, and that was in the 50s. And in the 60s, it was the same. And Richard Feynman, who I mentioned before, he mentioned that only dopes work in this area because there's no experimental data. He was commenting on the quality of people those fields attracted. I mean, general relativity, because everyone was working in quantum theory. And Stephen definitely was one who changed that completely and lifted the study of general relativity and gravity, to a height where the best people study instead of the worst.
So, in other words, Stephen Hawking was able to take the first giant steps toward applying the quantum theory to general relativity.
Right.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time. So, Leonard, thank you so much for being on Science Fantastic.
Thank you, Michio.
Once again, the book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. We should also point out that Professor Mladenov is the author of a number of great books, including The Grand Design, A Briefer History of Time, that he wrote with Stephen Hawking. And you are listening to Science Fantastic. Go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org, to find out what I'm up to. And if you want to get on 100 radio stations to ask a question about science, give us a call at 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters to the radio station and the website, and maybe you can get on Science Fantastic.
Hi, my name is Lily. My mom and dad used to fight about money all the time. Then one day, I heard them talking about this guy, some uncle I never knew, called Uncle Sam. Well, they say this Uncle Sam guy wanted them to pay him like a gazillion dollars, and they didn't have a gazillion dollars. So they called this company they heard on the radio called the Tax Doctor. And the Tax Doctor worked with Uncle Sam's people. I think they're called the IRS. and they were able to work it out so my mom and dad didn't have to pay Uncle Sam very much money at all. So now mom and dad are happy, and I'm happy too. Thanks, Tax Doctor.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state, call now and pay less.
800-215-1727. 800-215-1727. That's 800-215-1727.